play as I sat down to watch Imposters. I was joined by my wife, Amy, who sat down and we folded laundry and watched an episode of Star Trek Picard. In other words, pure domestic bliss. We got to that early scene where Picard is talking to Beverly and Jack in like the hallway of the Titan. He's like, "It's been so nice to meet you and to hang out with you," or whatever he's talking about. And Crusher leaves, and Amy's watching it. And it cuts to the next scene, and she's like, "I thought there were Next Generation cast members in this besides Picard." I was like, "There are." And she's like, "Who's in it?" I said, "Geordi is going to be in it eventually. Worf is in it. You haven't seen him yet, but Riker's in it." And obviously, like, Beverly Crusher's in it. She goes, "Beverly Crusher's in it?" I said, "Yeah, she was in the scene that we just got done watching." She goes, "That was Beverly Crusher?" I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "That was a black woman."
What?
So apparently, well, if you watch her through a certain half-paying attention lens, which I did afterwards, she does look a little bit... African American in some ways. It's really weird. Her hair, and most of this is a lead in to say that Gates McFadden has had a lot of work done and that Amy can't recognize who she is when she sees her. But
well, it's also funny because Gates McFadden is the pastiest of white,
right? But if you in the lighting, I like it, it, this sounds strange, but honestly, if you go back and watch that scene, she does look not white in it in some way, like, because I was okay. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's it's clear it's Irish Gates McFadden right there. But no, so apparently the work has not paid off tremendously, but it also tied in to me watching it, because when Michelle Forbes came on, I said, is that still Michelle Forbes? So I don't know. Patrick Stewart looks like an old version of Patrick Stewart, but everyone else is just not the people that I used to know, much like OTA said.
I really liked that scene with Picard and Jack in the hall, because he pitches Starfleet to him like it's a multi-level marketing scam.
Yeah, you got to get in.
Have you thought about joining Starfleet? if you get five of your friends to join, they'll make you a commander.
Have some supplements too. You have to sell these to your closest friends. This is Imposters. It's the fifth episode of the third season of Star Trek Picard. It came out on March 16th, 2023. Written by Cindy Appel and Chris Durick. Directed by Dan Liu. I think that's how you pronounce it. In universe date 78186.03, or 3, as Patrick Stewart would say. 24.01 is the year. And this one, caught by Starfleet and facing court-martial, paranoia grows as Picard struggles to uncover whether a prodigal crewman from his past has returned as an ally or as an enemy hell-bent on destroying them all. What'd you think of Imposters?
I thought it was good. I thought it was the most relevant and not hammy use of an old character they've done on this show. I thought the scene where they yell at each other in the bar for a few minutes actually worked pretty well as a way to rehash some old stuff, but also the point of it was for them to realize that neither of them was a changeling. I thought that was good. I like Shaw still. I liked how giddy he was at the prospect of turning in Riker and Picard. I thought it was pretty. My favorite thing is the way that the hell's his name? Worf says Ferengi. He says it Ferengi.
Yeah, Ferengi.
As though it's a
sick burn,
a Latin dance or something.
Yeah, I was all ready to. I was all prepared to come in screaming on this podcast when I was like, "They fucking killed Worf so dirty. They did. They treated him so wrong."
Yeah, I couldn't believe that for a second. They were gonna kill him there.
I thought it was possible when they dragged him off. I was like, "Okay, something's going to happen here, because there's no way you just drag somebody off like that out of this." But it was not. It was my priors about these series coming to fruition. Or it was like in the final season of Picard, I could see Worf dying this way. And it wouldn't be too shocking to me.
It would be shocking to me only because he at that point had not hooked back up with anybody else from the show. And there's no way
that doesn't happen. Yeah,
there's no way that they would. that that would happen and fans would let the producers live afterwards.
Yeah. No, it's but it's not a franchise that has done death particularly well, you know? Like he might have just been another corpse on the pile.
I was thinking that they don't have a great the new Star Trek does not have a great track record with females with women in positions of power in Starfleet. They keep killing them off.
Evil Admiral. Yeah.
Yeah, they killed Ro, they killed the woman from Discovery. The one from season one of Picard turned out to be an evil Romulan.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're saying under the subtext of this show, but
yeah, bitches be crazy.
That must be it.
Yeah. But the Worf fake out did lead to probably the only moment that's ever made me laugh in Picard, where Dorn is like, I need some serious medical attention.
Yeah, that was good. It was great too, because he starts talking about this like Kalis breathing thing, and I'm like, oh geez. And then he's like, I need, you know what, forget it.
I'm losing a lot of blood.
That whole scene, I like the, I'm curious to hear your thoughts about the Vulcan gangster guy, because I thought he was pretty good. That was Joe Toy from Band of Brothers. Oh, okay. I feel like anytime I see someone from Band of Brothers, I feel like I was in the Band of Brothers with them.
Right.
You point at them and I, you know, give them the nod. But like, I don't know, that whole thing where they pretended to fight each other and when did they plan to fake his death?
They just winked at, I think they just winked at each other before they, I don't think they planned it. I think it was just this is the way it's going to go.
Yeah. I don't know. That's
which
kind
makes
of
less
a,
sense. It's like, yeah, that's a it's lot kind of a, yeah,
it's kind of, it's a big decision to make on the fly. It is. I guess is what I'm saying.
It is.
But and I, you know, the Raffi stuff again, it continues to be I'm of two minds, cause I really like the Worf stuff, but I don't like the Raffi stuff. And so it's, makes this weird sort of Ferengi when they mix them together.
Yeah.
That where it has like a sweet taste at the front but a nasty taste at the back.
Why did he mispronounce, that's a beautiful sexual metaphor there, Clyde. But yeah. Why did he mispronounce Ferengi? He's been saying it for 40 years.
I don't know. I think it's just one of those things.
New teeth?
Maybe. Yeah, they just, that was the take they used and he said it wrong or whatever. I don't know. It's like Bones not being able to pronounce that creature.
Which creature? Sorry.
What the one that was in Lower Decks that had like three different names, and it was because...
Oh, the Mugato or whatever?
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. did you ever see the Key and Peele sketch about it's a bunch of like gangbangers, and one of them has died. And like Jordan Peele is like the one who's giving like the eulogy about the dying gang member.
No, I don't think so.
It's very funny. I always find it, there's like a new Key and Peele sketch I find every single day, but that one's particularly funny. But if people are familiar, they'll have a sense of the weird ass noise that Worf made. I hate the Raffi stuff. I mean, I like Worf. Yeah. I like Dorn as Worf, but the Raffi plot is just a fucking waste of time.
What else is really distracting about it is that they write it especially comes out when they pair, when she's paired with Worf, they write her like a stereotypical modern television writer, television character.
Yeah.
Where like in the scene where when they're training and he sits down and does the meditation thing, she's like, oh, good, doing the old meditation thing, huh? Well, you know, like it's got that sort of weird quippiness to it that's kind of self-aware, and it doesn't I don't know if they're doing that specifically to have her be a counterpoint to Dorn and Worf, but it's just, I don't know, I just, nothing about her character is interesting. I feel like they gave the same information about the Daystrom Center like three times in this episode.
Yeah.
I like that when they're talking about it at first, and Worf is like, we can't get in there because they have this AI thing. And then when they have the knife on Joe Toy, he says the exact same. I was hoping he was going to be like, yes, we already know this part. We skip this part, because he just goes through the same information that they said like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. It's almost like AI is in the news. I don't like the Raffi plot. Like, the Raffi plot is a part of the larger thing about this episode that I felt like I felt this episode was really treading water in a lot mm-hmm. of ways. And I think that the Raffi stuff is most obvious because they go back to the same goddamn planet that they were at. Like,
yeah, I was, this is the episode where I really started to feel like, okay, they must have had less of a budget, or they just put the budget in different places, because they have literally three locations on the show now.
Yeah.
It's either like, let's go hang out in the holodeck for a second, and it's just automatically Guinan's bar.
Yep. Always.
Because that's the only other set that they have to go to.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know how much I hate unnecessary movement. So the fact that they go back to the same planet.
I don't feel that plot is moving anywhere, really.
It's really not, no. Because, go ahead.
Well, it's like, I mean, going back to the planet is one thing. They introduce a new character, so you have a little bit of time to spend with not the Ferengi, but the Vulcan. And, I think that...
Vulcan.
The Vulcan. The problem with it is also that, like, I'm pretty interested in Worf's character development to this point, and they haven't really touched on it at all. He does it, and like he'll say things that are kind of unusual for Worf to say, and it provides a little bit of friction, but it's not really being explored as to like how he got here, sort of, or like what this is beyond just a new character tick. I don't even know if they have to, but I think that it's something that should be done.
I think what's coming is there's going to be some reveal that something happened to his son.
Oh.
Because he has more than once mentioned how much he, quote, has had to sacrifice for this mission.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, there's got to be, so what's the thing?
Oh, sure.
The running theme in this season with all the male characters is
their son.
Son-related trauma.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to have to do with something.
Another body on the pile, as they did.
Well, or maybe they'll go the other way and he'll just remember that he had a son.
I can't die yet. I have to pay alimony.
But I don't know if it was... I'm not sure if it was in this episode or if it was in the teaser I saw for the next one.
Yep.
When they're talking about... I think it was maybe at the end of this one. But basically, we're at this when Worf is explaining what's going on to Picard and Riker, they mention, or he and Raffi mention, that the attack on the recruitment center was just a diversion, blah 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 blah, portal, something bigger. And I was like, this is the same information that we had for this plot line in the first episode of the show.
Yeah.
Literally had nothing has moved.
Yeah.
They figured out it was the Ferengi guy, the Romulan guy. They went there. They got no information from the Ferengi guy. They killed the Ferengi guy. And then they went back to the planet and got information they already had from the Vulcan guy. And they got, I guess they got a little garage door opener now that they can get into Daystrom with.
Yeah.
But aside from that, it's like, There's nothing has moved forward with this story.
Agreed. My general takeaway from this one is that like I'm generally enjoying this season, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like I watch it and I think that it's pretty much okay. It doesn't blow my socks off. I don't think it's egregiously troubled in the sense that some of the prior seasons were. But this one definitely felt to me the most like what Darren Mooney was talking about in his review, where this felt like an episode that got inserted into the show after they learned that Michelle Forbes was going to be available for a day to do her role as Ro Laren here. And I'm not opposed to seeing Ro, but I found it very difficult for them to work her back into the show. Because apparently, like it was one thing if she was a changeling, right? And this was all like made up nonsense that was going on. I would have been okay with it. But apparently, she was allowed back into Starfleet for the exact same way that she was allowed into when she made her appearance in TNG. That like she was bad, and then Starfleet gave her like another chance, and she just got a mission out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, are they really just repeating that arc with the character? Like, how many times can Starfleet be fooled? You know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you, or whatever the fucking thing is. So I was curious about that. And it also is just like, it's the problem I've been having this entire season, which is that when they try to resurrect old characters and give them modern problems, it feels like a soap opera to me.
Sure.
And yeah. I just like, you know, Picard liked Roe. I don't know if Picard has been thinking about Roe for 20 years. Like that's my thing with it. It's just, it's a character that's come back, so we have to feel emotional about it. But it's all, I find my biggest gripe with the show is that even though I don't dislike it, it's a lot of empty calories to me. And that's my big deal with it.
Yeah, I found the Roe stuff interesting because I have essentially no connection with that character. I'm sure that I watched a bunch of episodes.
You How might many not episodes have. She's only in a couple. She's only in you know, a handful.
Maybe I didn't. I think I watched at least one, but I don't really have a connection to that character or really know what her connection was to Picard.
Yep.
And based on the way that they were talking, it sounded like they were in some sort of relationship to the point where it almost sounded like she was accusing him of being a groomer, which was kind of weird.
That's a little bit more interesting. That's not empty calories.
But, you know, I didn't remember what their relationship was. It sounded like they were in love with each other, but it doesn't, judging by that response, that doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, I think that's the melodrama of it, right? Like I agreed with the sub or the text of what they're saying, which is that Picard was basically a mentor to her, and he tried to get her to buy into the Starfleet system. And in her final appearance, she decided to side with the Maquis and betray Starfleet so that the Maquis could escape, and she left with them. And Picard ends that episode looking very disappointed in what she's done. And I don't know. It's just when you bring it back and they have them talk about it, they have to talk about it in this like overly emotional way that, and as you're saying, implies like there was some like fucking going on. Like there was something deeper than just a betrayal of, it's something more deep than like Sisko screaming, you betrayed your uniform, you know, against that guy who betrayed Eddington. So I don't know. It's like, I like Roe as a character. I thought that her ending was good, where she leaves. I don't understand why she would be allowed back in the Starfleet at this point over again. And it speaks to the nature of what TNG was. When you bring a character back like this, you have to add a lot to that character and that relationship to make it feel like it's worth something in being brought back. And that's where my problem is. It feels like they feel like they must add things to this relationship that I did not interpret to be there in the first place, or the strength of the feeling was never this way in TNG. And so when you see all the emotion pour out here, it feels written. It just doesn't feel like these are the characters that I've come to expect in the same way that the Picard of this show does not feel like a very older version of Picard to me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I'm... To hear you say that, to hear the way you describe their relationship, it makes what Picard says later very strange when Riker says, "I know what she mean to you," and he's like, "You definitely do not." And
Riker had sex with her. Riker actually had sex with her.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Why didn't they have the scene together?
That's what I'm talking about. And Riker's the last person to see her too, and he says goodbye, Ro. But they had like some sort of mental thing going on that when they had sex with each other, that they remember it, but they weren't acting under their own powers while it was happening. I would have. Riker should have at least done something, said something there. Just he remembers.
Yeah, that's even more strange then. And one of the things I wonder when they do this kind of thing is, is the way that they're thinking about this in their mind, are they thinking about it like, what we're doing is we're giving text to what they couldn't do 30 years ago?
Yes, I think that's what they're doing.
Because of because of the limitations of and mandates of how they were supposed to handle things on the show. Or maybe not that specifically, but there's
I feel that whatever, they're just filling in the blanks of what is now expected with the material that was what the show was at the time.
Yeah. But that is kind of what it feels like. It feels like they're taking these relationships that were presented in a certain way, and they're kind of going like, yeah, but that's not really what was going on. We know that what was really going on was this, and so that's what we're going to act on.
Yes.
And I think that is a... I think that's going to be your mileage may vary with that, because I think there's going to be people who like that, and I think there's going to be people who don't like that. I don't really care that much about these characters in that way. So it bothers me in that every person in Picard's life in this show across three seasons has to eventually get into a screaming match with him about something.
Yeah. Like bring him almost to tears.
Yeah. It's like, how many times can you do that? Like, he's already done it in this season with Beverly and Roe and Riker. And I'm sure he's going to do it with Worf at some point. We still got to get to Geordi. He's going to scream at Geordi for leaving the lights on in the engine room when he's supposed to shut him off at night or something. I don't know. it's that's where the melodrama comes out for me. Not because the melodrama itself bothers me as like, on principle,
right?
It's just that it's all the same thing. Like it's always finally Picard and his coworker, who he's been amiable with for 30 years, are going to have it out,
right?
About something we didn't know happened, and it's just I don't know. It gets kind of old.
And I think that the repetition of that is tougher too, because it's one of those things like in the original Roe and Picard relationship, I like the idea of a mentor being betrayed and feeling hurt more than I like this idea of like, you hurt me so deeply as a friend when you left.
Yeah.
You know, like that's just not the tone that TNG had that I find is what makes TNG so appealing, which is that like workplace drama that you have.
Right.
And so when they lay on the tears and they lay it on thick about like everybody that Picard had the most, you know, faintest of interactions with, like Rose a little bit more than that, but you know, not a main cast member, someone who was in a handful of episodes that he had an interaction with, and he memorably had a bad interaction with her in her final appearance. It's just it's the show, it's this awkward thing of the show is held bound to the past of its heritage, but it's not comfortable enough to just embrace what the show was when it was on originally on TV as TNG. Mm-hmm. So they have to change it a little bit. And I find it, the problem with the repetition of it too, is that I feel like the character of Picard at this point is so removed from what he was on the show that it's kind of irritating. The way that he is, like I find him extremely feeble in this show, not just physically, but like sort of mentally. And, and I watch him and then I just have flashes in my mind of the old TNG episodes, like where he, you know, in the Pegasus episode where Riker committed mutiny and he can't admit and Picard chews him out a little bit. Like, there's no force of character there about someone who's like doing the right thing and feeling strongly about what he's doing in this one. He just feels like he's kind of meek all the time. And I find it a little bit frustrating and not interesting because it's not what the character was to me.
Yeah. I read one review from someone who had an advanced seen the first six episodes or whatever. And they were talking a bit about that. And they said, there's one point in episode three or four where Riker talking to Picard almost feels like elder abuse.
Yeah. When he says you killed us all, you son
probably,
of a bitch.
Yeah. But I mean, it's,
and maybe Stewart can't do it, but it's a, I feel it goes beyond Stewart's acting. I feel that he's just not written. Like the writing is more a parade to show misery at the end of someone's career than it is a, like, it's not even if they just redid the Kirk like finding his mojo again thing, it feels like that's at least more fun to watch.
Which they kind of are tease it a bit in this, like every now and then he gets a burst of energy, but
yeah. And then those moments like when he took command, you know, of the yeah. ship for the first time. It's got stuff like that, but
yeah, I think the tough thing is, and it's been this way since the first season, is it just feels whether or not they're doing this on purpose, it feels like it's a Jean-Luc Picard apology tour.
Yeah.
Instead of a victory lap, you know?
Yeah.
Which is weird because the way that they are presenting stuff, especially in this season, is very much a...
He's a legend.
Yeah, he's a legend, and the whole concept, the meta concept of the show is a victory lap for 90s Star Trek.
Right.
But they're presenting it in a way where it's everybody's screaming at Picard and him being like, everyone hates me. And like, there would be, I would be more impressed if they actually had taken on the idea of the nostalgia that they're playing with and kind of commented on it a bit and commented on why it might not necessarily be the best thing in the world. But they're not doing that. And it's like,
I'll be for knocking down the fandom's opinion of Picard in that
yeah.
way. You know, that's fine.
And I mean, they kind of, I feel like they're kind of trying to do that, but they're not, I don't believe that it's a thematic point of the show as much as, all right, we need Shaw to be mad at Picard, so let's bring up Wolf 359 again and talk about how he's not that great because he got a bunch of people killed or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the thing in the elevator in this one where he's like, aren't you the guys that caused a time temporal whatever and then yeah. almost blew this thing up?
I remember two out of three of those references. I did not remember what the third one was. But that's
but even there, on. Even there, they're not doing it to actively comment on anything that Picard has done in his life. It's just for a joke, really.
But he's not a... That's the thing about the character. He's not a character that can be taken to task that way. Like,
right, yeah. He's not Action Jackson, yeah. It's like all that stuff, but it's like...
Well, it's also, he never... he did, like, there's two points. So he's not Action Jackson, as you're saying, but he was also... To try to turn the stuff he did into he was some sort of immoral monster as he was right. doing it, it makes no yeah. sense. It's not the way the character works.
Yeah. 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 You know, I had watched a handful of movies, not on purpose, from like the 70s and 80s, more so the 80s, I think, that were dealt with nostalgia. And looking back on stuff, one of them was The Color of Money. Another one was Madhouse with Vincent Price and Peter Cushing.
Yep.
And the thing that I took away from it that I found very interesting was these older movies that deal with nostalgia don't view it as a positive. It always ends up being something that they ultimately commenting on as being bad.
Yep.
Like over reverence to something so far in the past is not good. Even I just watched Last Night in Soho, the Edgar Wright movie.
Yep.
And I was really kind of impressed by it because when it started, I was like rolling my eyes so hard because it's like, okay, 60s music. It's London. This main character's like, oh my God, I love London in the 60s. Isn't it so great? And I was like, all right, I guess this is what we're doing here. And then about once you get into the story, it's basically about this girl who's in love with the idea of 60s London, actually experiencing it and finding out how much it sucked.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's actually pretty clever. He managed to do a love letter and a takedown to this thing all in the same piece. Mm-hmm. And I wish that they would do... This isn't going to bug me for the rest. I'm not going to keep bringing this up because this isn't the show they made. But I just wish they had done something like that where it's like the nostalgia is there for more than just cheap heat, as they'd say in wrestling.
Right.
You know, it's or cheap pop, rather. I think in this one, I do like this what they did with Roe, even though I guess the content of it is murky because I don't really know. But I actually thought that her usage in that scene was one of the better callbacks that they've done because it actually served a purpose. And yep. their relationship and hashing out their relationship in such an intimate way was the way that they figured out that they were both human. And I was like, right. okay, that's actually pretty clever. That's a clever use of that.
Yeah.
And that comes close to kind of commenting on that stuff because it's they only find out who they are by dredging up old pain.
Yes.
And it's not like that in and of itself is not a victory lap for, hey, look, it's Rolaren, she's back. So I think that was a little bit clever, but yeah, I think that's the problem is it's fine. It's like a Star Trek toy box show.
Yep.
And I'm enjoying watching it. I'm definitely enjoying this season more than I've enjoyed the first two. Agreed. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. Agreed.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, I might come back. I was going to say I'd come back and watch it again for the ship, but I'd probably just go online and watch it.
Just look at the picture on the internet.
A fan cam cut on the ship.
Yeah. I'm only drawn to like a tertiary thing that's tangential to it, but I guess that the it's tough to go back and do this series later, obviously. And your point about like the 60s kind of brought it up. I'm assuming that movie about the 60s is a very recent release.
Yeah, it's from 2021, I think.
So I'm kind of reminded about, there was a conversation on the Discord we were having where someone brought up reviewing older things, right? And whether or not you should review in the mindset of the time or if a review should like review things in the current perspective back on something. So like, should you review an album from 1981 in the context of what 1981 was, or should you review it from the point of view of someone in 2023?
Mm.
And people on the Discord seem to generally, the majority would say that you have to review it in the context of the era. And I'm not particularly smart, and my counter is hard to vocalize about why I don't think that's true, but I was reading a Chuck Klosterman book about his take of it, and he explained it much better. And his example was Mad Men, which is your 60s analog, which is just that it is not possible to write or comment on something in the context of something that happened in the past. It's just not possible to do that. What right. What Mad Men is a 2010 vision of what the 60s were like. And it's probably not very accurate to what the 60s actually were at the point, right?
Sure.
So yeah. It's a modern perception looking back on something that cannot accurately review that in the context because you are no longer in that context. It's not possible. Like everything that you know at this point is changed from your current perspective on these things. Right. So all retroactive reviews are pretending to understand what it was like to be there at the time. Even if you right. were there at the time, your perspective has changed because you have 20 years later of experience built on top of it. So I feel like the Picard show doesn't recognize that problem. So what it does is that it writes Star Trek in a modern lens of what these are the things that modern audiences expected these characters to be thinking about during these times. Mm-hmm. And the fact is those characters weren't thinking about this stuff. Like this, it wasn't the text of the show.
Yeah.
So I think that that's my main issue with it. And the Roe problem, like I agree that I kind of liked, I have a tangential thing to liking about the Roe. What I actually like the most about this season is that they've advanced the ideas of the changeling infiltration a little bit further than DS9 ever took it, which I kind of like because I think that idea is like very ripe for exploration. And even still, I wish they were playing up the paranoia aspect a little bit more. Like DS9 always just hinted that the changelings were all around you, and it hardly ever amounted to much. Like occasionally it would, but it was more the fear that you weren't sure of who was who, what was the driver of it. And I really that. I like that in this sort of self-contained, you're out there on the Titan and you're not sure who's who anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much longer they're going to play with it. But I also am struck by the, they have to change the rules of the game a little bit. They're like, these changelings look exactly like humans. Like you can't do the blood test anymore. So they have to amplify it that way. But I wish the show had stuck to a paranoia aspect, because I find that really fascinating. It's just that I don't find the resolution of, here we're both going to cry and therefore we know that we are real people to each other. I wish there was a better, little bit of like a mystery explanation beyond that. But that's what it is. But I do like the changelings in this one for whatever reason.
Yeah, I the one thing that they said in that Guinan bar scene that I thought was interesting was when she accused him of confusing morality with duty.
Yeah,
and that was the one line where I was like, oh, that's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah,
like,
that's true. That's a good criticism of him.
Yeah, this is everything else they're saying is sort of like, you know, you were never there for me.
Yeah,
bullshit. But that one line, I was like, oh, that's actually a pretty accurate cutting comment about the character of Picard.
Yeah. I like the cut. Like it's tough because they've done it so often that it's lost all of its luster. But the idea of challenging Starfleet as an institution is an idea that, if executed well, could amount to something. The problem mm-hmm. is that Discovery and all the Picard seasons have kind of acted as if that's the status quo, really, with Starfleet.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, it's another Starfleet has been compromised story.
Mm-hmm.
Like
all the ships have been compromised too out there.
Yeah, they did that in the first season.
Yep, Romulan infiltration.
Did they do it in the second? I guess they were in the past in the second season, so who the hell knows?
But. Yes. No, Starfleet is pure, I guess, in the second one, so maybe not the second season to start, no, Picard.
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels kind of old hat.
Yes.
It's a problem.
At least it's the changelings, and it's not just the people themselves.
Right. Yeah. At least it's not just Starfleet's morality is actually bad.
Yeah. And at the same time, I feel that I like the changelings, but I do keep coming back to Darren's essay about this. It's like the changelings are starting to feel like they're not really going to get into them, and they are just going to be a callback villain that we can use because they make sense in the context of the story.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't really surprise me that much. There's a lot going on.
It's too bad because I like the changelings.
No, it is. Yeah, the changelings are great.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. The tough part is that if you want to get into the changelings, you need 3 seasons of Deep Space Nine to do it.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. I love the changeling ethos. I think they were a really interesting villain idea about, like, yeah, in the interest of self-preservation, we're going to be proactive in hurting others. And here, I don't know. They're just like putzing around the ship doing something.
Well, I think that's a larger problem in general. Excuse me. That I mentioned last episode is I still don't know what anybody wants in this show.
Yeah.
Like, what do the changelings want? And I understand that you could argue that, like, well, yeah, that's the question of the season, but it's like, well, I mean, that's the driving thing.
I thought this was a big let's amplify the mystery episode where they tell you anything, but they were like, he's getting more visions. The changelings are, there's more changelings. Things are coming, you know?
Yeah. It was more noise, but it wasn't,
right, no clarity.
There was no clarity to it, which is, we're at the halfway point of the season, and all we have is distortion at this point.
Yeah.
And so it's, I think that's why, or I should say that's, that's what amplifies for me whatever this Frontier Day thing is.
Every time they say that.
Being so uninteresting to me because they can only talk about it in the vaguest conspiratorial terms.
Yeah.
And halfway through the season, not having any clear motive for what's going on is kind of tough to care about.
It is.
And so what you end up writing is characters who are just talking very loudly and very seriously about this thing, but you don't know why that is a big deal other than, and it becomes a thing where it's the thing they're talking about. It's like, it's like the problem with not in Star Trek, but like a lot of times in comic books, especially like Marvel stuff. When Captain America goes to space and ends up fighting like the Beyonder or the Living Tribunal or something, they can talk as seriously about the stakes as you want them to, and you can try to get them to get across how big of a deal it is, but you're still talking about things that are just unrelatable.
Yeah.
And it's having the stakes be unrelatable that makes these plot elements not feel like anything. They just feel really empty.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, well, I mean, if we threaten the whole planet, clearly that's really bad.
Right.
It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, but so who gives a shit? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. No.
It's that kind of thing.
Agreed. I'm a little bit surprised that, you know, the season is obviously better. It gets a lot better reaction to it. I personally just can't help but notice that that's something that has always been a staple of the modern Trek series, which is that like the driver is so, never revealed to you.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Why do they keep doing this?
It's
what is it's, how does the show benefit from this?
I don't know.
How do any of the shows benefit from this?
I think it's just like, just on a writing level, I think it just weakens your scripts. Like, you know, other shows would hint at things in the start of it. Like we talked last episode about if they had opened the season with that Picard in the bar entertaining those Starfleet cadets, and then Jack asked him a question, but you weren't sure who Jack was at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, it gives you a sense that there is something planned out here and that this is building towards something. You can't just plop it into the fifth episode apropos of nothing and have it to have the same impact on it. And I think that the other very modern Trekkie thing is Jack's visions here, which is, it falls into the amplification thing where we're getting more of the noise but less clarity. And I fucking hate this storyline. Whatever this is going to turn into is going to be pretty awful. But mostly because the we can talk specifically about Jack, but the episode had a couple moments where I laughed at the show, and it was not intentionally being funny. The final scene with Jack and Crusher looking at each other as the music was going boom boom, that killed me. I thought that was fucking terrible, but I don't know. Jack's a Bourne agent who's been reactivated and he can shoot changelings when he needs to survive to get to the next level. Is he Picard's son? What has happened here?
I don't know.
And before you do this, I don't know if you noticed this. We talked last episode about the female voice that he's hearing.
Yes.
And we thought it was the female changeling. Mm-hmm. It's Crusher.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I was watching with the subtitles and it says Beverly Crusher's voice.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know what's going on with him. And again, it's like they've been doing the same thing for five episodes with him.
And but so the roots are getting veinier on his face whenever those things happen.
I guess. Yeah. You know, and there's also this is just a old man nitpick, but there's something about when the bit where he kind of when he's surrounded by the changelings and then his Bourne switch gets flipped and he turns into like a karate master. They do that shit so often in these shows and there's some times where you want that to happen, right? Like seeing Worf actually move like he knows how to fight.
I know, it's still kind of cool. it's actually pretty cool to see that. Even though the cuts are so frequent that you can just tell the clip, each cut is being like artificially sped up and stuff, but it is still kind of neat.
Yeah, like the scene where he's training with Raffi, and then, you know, he's training, they're doing the normal sword fight, and then he goes into that like Matrix sort of thing where he's like not paying attention and blocking all our hits. That's cool.
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of thing. That's Darth Vader at the end of Rogue One. It's like you've been, because of limitations, we couldn't get him to move like this, but now we can. And it's cool to see.
Yes.
But there's other times where you've got like this Jack Crusher stuff where it's like, this just feels so modern and hokey to turn him into a karate master or anybody rather. It's like the difference. It's really interesting that they've done this enough times in popular culture that I can like split them up into identifiable baskets where you've got the Darth Vader thing on one side and based on the movie trailer, the Michael Keaton Batman thing on the other side where it's like, I never wanted to see Michael Keaton's Batman jumping around like a CGI thing. Like part of the thing that makes him so cool is his limited movement.
Yeah.
Whether or not that was by design is irrelevant.
Right. It's like, it's part of the character at this point. That's how he moves.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's just not, that's not what I'm coming to that to see.
Yep.
And so it's funny to see where these things kind of pop up in different ways where it's like, oh yeah, Worf actually fighting well, that's something we would like to have seen.
Yep.
Jack Crusher turning into Jason Bourne for no reason other than the fact that, you know, we did it with the android girl in the first season. We may as well do it with him.
Yeah. Yeah, remember when Picard got blown up in the first season and they just woke up on the couch?
That was the first, that should have been the first indication that this show is not going in the right direction.
So, the changelings. Are the changelings...
Why do they always know kung fu? Like, why... How come every time one of these switches gets flipped, why do they always turn into Jackie Chan? Why can't
this they was do a little bit like Equilibrium, a little bit of Gunkata.
Gunkata,
was the influence here.
Hell, let's bring the. I'm down for that. I take back everything I said.
I still love that final scene in that movie where he fights like the head boss, and they have like the gun kung fu, like they're
so
fighting over the gun.
Stupid. It's so ridiculous,
but it's such a cool idea.
It is.
I don't know if that movie would that movie be better with a remake or worse? Probably worse, right?
Yeah, that was. I think you'd have to take that one back to formula if you were to remake that one. I can't. Every time I watch John Wick now, though, all I think about is Equilibrium because the way that they do the gun stuff in John Wick, they're not using like actual blanks or anything.
Yeah,
it's all CGI,
right?
And so the guns move like Gunkata, where they're just firing off next to people's heads and nobody cares. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just it's very weightless.
So the changelings, I have a question. Are the changelings stuck in their human form to any degree? I'm wondering why the changelings are so ineffective at being changelings in the show. Is the understanding that they are kind of, in the way that this one died and it got stuck in its human form, is shape-shifting hard for them or something?
It might be. I don't know. We haven't really spent enough time with them to really figure that out.
Because they turn into goo and go into the walls every once in a while.
Right. And the one that Worf killed turned into goo after he killed him.
Yep.
So they're not all advanced or evolved.
But I mean, like in DS9, when Odo would get threatened with a punch, his head would shape-shift out of the way. You know?
Right, yeah. That's expensive.
And yeah, I'm like 55% in the camp now that Jack is not Picard's son for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough call. Because they've done so much heavy lifting in that regard up front.
Yeah.
That it feels like it would be really
agreed. That's why it's barely worse than a coin flip. I know what you mean.
Yeah, it would just be really. I don't know what you get out of that to pull the rug out from under him at the end of the season, unless it's a situation where this Jack is a changeling and they're holding the real Jack or something. Ugh.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah,
but like,
so you think he's a changeling?
I have no idea. I honestly don't know.
Okay, I don't know either.
Because the visions he's having are not changeling visions.
No, was this the episode where he saw? Does he see Crusher or something? Sort of blurry, jumping towards him, something like that. Or was it the previous episode?
I don't remember.
Might have been the previous one.
I keep seeing a door.
Yeah, I keep seeing the door.
They love fucking doors on this show. Every one of these shows, it's like they read one book, one Freud book or something, and then it's like, well, I got it.
The locked door.
Let's go to the typewriter.
Yeah. Cigars are cigars and doors are doors.
And it's always an old door. Like, Jack Crusher, by all accounts, was born on a fucking starship or something.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And like, but the door he's seeing is like a wooden door from a Victorian house or some shit.
You have to use your back of the hand on the doorknob to make sure it's not hot before you open that thing. Yeah, I'm not.
I hope he happy goes. I hope he goes in through that door and finds his grandmother hanging by her neck in the garden.
I went through the same thing, Jack. I don't like that. I don't like the Jack storyline. But on the positives, you know, Frakes and Dorn are still very good in this one. Mm-hmm. The show cannot break the spirit of Michael Dorn. he's going to fight through it no matter what. Riker still is pretty strong. Crusher is take it or leave it, I think.
She's consistent with her role on the original show.
I feel she's gotten more into that. Yes. I think that especially liked her doctoring scenes now that she's made friends with the real doctor and she can be a doctor.
I thought the real doctor was going to be a changeling.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be a payoff for the fact that she didn't know how to use her fucking machine in the first episode.
Yeah. Yeah. The changelings. So
I do think you're right, and Darren is probably right to a certain extent, because there's I know I've said this in some way, shape, or form before on the show, but there's a thing that I've always believed to be true when it comes to reusing creatures that are hard to defeat, like say the alien from Aliens.
Right.
That's when you do a sequel, it's either there's more of them, they're harder to kill, or it's got to be one of those. Like that, you can't be both.
Right.
So if you're gonna have more changelings, then you're gonna kill them easier than you did in the first way around.
Right.
Yeah. It's almost always the way it is. Anytime that they bring the unkillable machine or the unkillable creature, oh shit! Now there's 20 of them. All right, yeah, but now we can kill them easier for some reason, just because the plot requires that.
Yeah, that's probably what's affecting the changelings here. I was trying to find a way to get into the, before we close out, like the changeling plot. Do you have any problems with like the Intrepid and stuff like that here?
Some of the logistics of what was going on was a little bit dicey to me. I think overall, more or less, it makes sense because Ro is talking about that the ships have been infiltrated and she thinks the captain is a changeling.
Yeah.
But
of the Intrepid. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not that everybody on the Intrepid is a changeling. I mean, there's still... I wasn't sure what was going on with the transporter stuff because they wouldn't transport Ro and the two other ones over, but she had no problem sending the Titan crew members to the Intrepid over the transporter?
I think it's the changelings would be detected in the transporter.
Okay.
I don't think they say it, interestingly, in the show, but that was what I thought was happening. That's why I don't even know if that's canon, that you could detect a changeling in the transporter, but I imagine it would be. I was confused, about what the extent of the changeling infiltration is. The Intrepid seems to be quite a few changelings on there.
There was at least five of them, because four of them are dead now.
Right. And which is maybe a little bit of a counter, you know, that DS9 episode where the changeling just says, can you guess how many changelings are on Earth? There's only two of us, and look what we've done with such limited capability. So I mean, that adds to your alien metaphor where they're just gonna throw more changelings at us. But you know, I just felt a little bit unsure about Rose, what the state of the Intrepid was at that point. How many changelings are over there? Is this a ship full of changelings? Are they all changelings? Is everyone in Starfleet a changeling? I don't know. So
if everybody in the Intrepid is a changeling, Ro sent the entire crew of the Titan over to a ship run by changelings.
So what's going on over there? Yeah. So it is what it is. But
yeah, I think overall they're kind of tapping into Star Trek VI a bit in this section of the show.
Yeah, it feels very, I mean, which makes sense being the last hurrah that you would copy Star Trek VI, but it does feel very reminiscent of that movie.
Yeah, so hopefully, what's his name? Shit, from RoboCop.
Weller?
No. Clarence Boddicker.
Oh, yeah.
She's the Klingon ambassador that they try to kill at the end of the movie.
Oh, is that him? That's Red Foreman.
Yes.
Why can't I think of the guy's name?
Is that him at the end of the movie, or is that who they kill earlier? I don't know. He plays a Klingon in one of these movies. I think it's that one.
Yeah. Why can't I think of?
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Clarence Boddicker, who is. You're going to make me click into it, God damn you. It's portrayed by. What the? Where the hell?
Why can't I think of his name?
Let's see who comes up with it first here. Kurtwood Smith.
Kurtwood
Smith. Yeah. He's coming up in an episode of Voyager, too.
Oh, good. I like him.
Yeah. So I guess we're done. With this one, I don't know.
Do you think Admiral Janeway is going to show up because they did name drop her in this one?
In this episode?
Yeah.
When did they do that?
When Ro and Picard were talking, she was telling him about what was going on with the infiltration. He's like, "Well, you could take this to Admiral Picard, Admiral Janeway." And she's like, "Nah, she won't even see me. She's not going to see you."
Yeah. So I'm in a tough position because I do feel I'm very negative on this show, which is not a terrible show, I guess.
No, it's good. It's fine.
Yeah, it's
enjoyable.
Yeah, and so I'm trying to think of what I most enjoy about.
What did you think of the Vulcan crime lord?
I didn't really like him. I thought he was Romulan for a very long time, which I thought might have made more sense. His rationale for it's logical, unless we're in Eden, it's logical to have a criminal element in society, which I thought was like one step away from being profound. I wish that had been workshopped a little bit. I didn't mind the performance, although he didn't strike me as particularly Vulcan-y.
Yeah, he didn't come off as Vulcan-y too much, and he had this weird affect to his voice.
Yes.
That's at the end when he was when they had him at knife point, he's like, "I believe that is logical."
Yeah, I really thought he was Romulan for a long time because he felt more Romulan-y to me than Vulcan.
Yeah, I was surprised that he was Vulcan, actually, yeah. Do you think Vulcan, is their favorite band Supertramp, do you think, because of the logical song?
It could be, although that would be maybe too logical.
Yeah,
the Vulcans like the Vulcans just like AABA songs, just repetitively.
They like that Tool shit where it's like written in the Fibonacci sequence.
They do, yeah. They would find that extremely fascinating and very logical. Anything else about this one? I don't think so. So I guess my going out positive is that. I am generally, I feel like all the aspects of it are like 50% there, and it's not far enough away where I don't think it's salvageable by the end, you know? Like I still see the ending as something that could be gotten to and would seem like it was a satisfying resolution. The further along we go, it's going to be the same problem with the other ones. Like once we start in another two episodes, if they have not revealed what's going on at that point, it's all going to be the typical mess of like the last episode explains everything for you.
Yeah. We're at episode 5.
Yeah.
I know we've been saying this since like episode 2, but we are at episode 5.
Right.
We still don't know what's really going on, and we still have to figure out how to get Geordi, Lore and fucking Moriarty into this show somehow.
Yeah. Well, Moriarty or Lore are the AI, right? That protects Data.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see them. Yeah. I feel like I guess that you know, I wish that the show had a more propulsive forward momentum to it.
Yeah.
That's it. Oh, and then your point. I have one last point before we go because we've been going for a while.
I was thinking of two things. I feel like lacking forward momentum is a good way to put it because I do think that movement in general is a problem in this show. Because, you know, they're going, Worf and Raffi are going back and forth to this one planet, and then the Titans going out to the nebula and then coming out of the nebula, and then they're kind of hanging around.
I feel like the Titans have just been floating where it's been for the past five episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not really doing anything in particular. And at least now they're kind of on the run.
Yeah.
But where to is anybody's guess. I guess they'll be going to the Daystrom, whatever. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully they get a little bit more of that. I miss the starships going to different places in an episode. You know, like getting to a different planet kind of thing. Very minor point. Have we talked about this? What do you think about the modern effect of the starship jumping out of warp just stops at a standstill?
They lifted that from Star Wars, right? When they were doing that in Rogue One, I think. Or did they do it before that? I don't remember, but I think that's a Star Wars thing that they've...
Not even like slowly moving forward as ships and then they jump into hyperspeed?
Oh, wait. Are you talking about stopping or starting?
Both. Hyperspace? So like I think that in Star Trek, actually, they will more likely, in this show, they will slowly start to drive away and then jump to warp to get out of there. But the sudden stop I find more irritating because I liked the graceful, the ship drops out of warp and then it just kind of coasts into something. Like it coasts into an orbit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's, I don't know. It's a very minor point, but I find it jarring that the ships just stop on a dime and are right there sitting next to each other.
Yeah, it's just more exciting, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. They're very close. They deal with very short distances to be safe. So yeah, my final, I forgot what the fuck the final thing was going to be. Oh, no.
Did you notice that they were doing like a... They kept doing this like Guy Ritchie thing every time they talked about the Daystrom station, where they would talk about what they were going to do and then cut in the activity of actually doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
is the person that they're cutting to at the Daystrom has to be Geordi, right?
Oh, I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing Geordi. I think.
Yeah, me too.
It can't be that strange. I guess that's it. I don't think I have anything else to say about this one. I've forgotten what I wanted to go out on. I don't think it was the speed thing. No. So, 5 episodes left. Sorry, I'm really stalling for time here. I thought I wanted to say something. Damn it. Oh, well.
Halfway, I mean, at this point in the story, we should have more info, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, this is sort of traditionally the halfway point is where, well, I mean, I guess they did give you the information that the infiltration was happening at a large scale. So I don't know, I guess that kind of counts a little bit. But
if you could get one thing in the next episode, what would you like to learn about? So I think the options are what's up with Jack.
Mm-hmm.
What did the changelings want?
Mm-hmm.
Is Picard and Jack related?
Mm-hmm.
Will Worf live? or who's like the AI at Daystrom? Like what lore and Moriarty have to do with any of this? Like are any of these tickling your fancy that you're like, I need to know what's going on here?
I need more from the Jack story.
Yeah, at least that's my choice too.
At least the other stuff, it's like, okay, infiltration, Daystrom, they got somewhere to go. Even if it's not fully explained what's going on yet, at least they have a goal. The Jack stuff is just running in place.
Yeah.
You know?
Agreed. I would like to know more.
It's about a stress test of a storyline.
Yeah, mostly just because it's not knowing his angle just leads to this kind of semi-annoying... it puts you in a kind of story stasis where I don't know which way I should go for characters, really.
Yeah. And also, especially because even Ro is there when she comes to the ship, they start asking for Jack and the changelings are looking for Jack. And then like once Ro blows up, they don't even mention Jack when they're talking about the Daystrom stuff and the infiltration, all that kind of stuff. It just, so it, none of that stuff feels connected at all.
Yeah.
And so I think you got to give us something with the Jack thing to show why this matters to the larger scale story.
Agreed. And I've remembered the final point. And we talked about it offline last week. And interestingly, I don't think it's confirmed in this episode, although my memory is shit. Metallus, the showrunner, tweeted that Vadik and her crew are changelings.
Oh, right, yeah.
So that is not confirmed in this episode, right? We don't see her, do we?
No, we do not.
We don't see her. So that was an interesting choice. We were talking about it offline about why would you do that?
Yeah.
Unless the show is going to reveal it next episode. Like, the only reason you would do that is you compared it to the time travel in Picard season 2, where they're like, no one seems to be understanding what's going on here. So we better go onto Twitter and try to explain how the time travel is functioning. Right.
Yeah.
And Vadik feels the same way, which is that did they just not clearly shoot the scene where she cuts her hand off and have them explain via ADR? Be like, my changeling body is allowing me to communicate with the homeworld or something. Why did he reveal that at that point? Because it seems like it's a twist.
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah, it's either a twist or it's like...
Can't be a twist. He revealed it, right? Like,
I don't know. The only thing I could think of is it was like explaining it was a detail that they decided to cut because they figured, well, she cuts her hands off and it turns into a changeling guy, so people will figure it out. Mm. But that being said, the way that they're presented, at no point do you learn that before. And so, you know what I mean? So right. it's not like when we cut back to those, to the Shrike that number of times where all she does is just go again. We see her face getting weird or see the little bird guys changing formers. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it would have been pretty easy to show that if they didn't want to spend the time to explain it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it has to mean that the Shrike is not a changeling ship, right? Because it does not function in any way that changelings would naturally operate like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they stole the ship. But it's also, it's another interesting point of, this is not the changeling MO. This is not how they operate. Like their strength is not in piloting ships, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So that's a decision that was made to have her be a threat with a ship that is allegedly a threat. They talk about her weapons enough, but I haven't seen it do anything. And so I don't know. I was shocked.
It could be a changeling ship, if you're right, in this evolved version of changelings are stuck in human form.
Yeah.
I guess.
Section 31 virus did that to them. Makes the most sense, I guess.
Yeah. And also, going back to the Ro thing, I didn't really mind that she made it back to Starfleet. Like, the route that they gave her to come back to Starfleet made as much sense as anything else to me, where it's like, 30 years ago, the Maquis... They kind of made up with the Maquis. Then she was recruited by Starfleet Intelligence. And then she worked her way back up through Starfleet Intelligence. Yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah. Well, kinda, she's done it twice, to be fair. That was how she was introduced on the series, too.
Okay. Right, you know, the exact same way. Okay.
Yeah, that's my problem with it, is that they gave her two chances, and she betrayed them horribly both times, and they still went back to her. That's what led me to think that it was, and maybe the show is intentionally doing that, making you think she's a changeling at that point, because that story doesn't make any sense, but that turns out to be the story, which is, you know.
Yeah.
All right, we're done. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this podcast about imposters. The next episode is, can I click and will it happen? The Bounty.
You ever see the movie Imposter from, it's like a mid-early 2000s movie with Gary Sinise?
No, I don't think so. I was thinking it was a Nolan movie. What's the first Nolan movie?
The Following.
Sorry, that's what I was thinking of. No, I haven't seen Imposter.
Imposter's pretty fun. I haven't watched it in 20 years, so it might not be any good, but it's a Philip K. Dick story.
Yep.
And it's one of those ones where Gary Sinise is finds out that there's a clone who is actually a bomb that's going to go off and assassinate somebody.
Yeah.
And then so he's going through the motions of he's being chased by whoever, and then at the end he finds out he's the bomb. So it's spoilers for Imposter, but it's a fun movie.
Yeah. Does he think that he's looking for a clone of himself the entire time?
No, he doesn't know until the very end where he finds the clone and then he finds out that it's actually his own dead body.
Right.
And then at that point, he realizes he's the clone and the bomb arms and explodes.
No, they stole it from that Star Trek DS9 episode where Miles O'Brien thinks that he's chasing his clone and it turns out that he's the bad clone in the first place. Remember that one?
Yeah, that one probably stole it from Philip K. Dick, honestly.
No. Completely original ideas. All right, so yeah, The Bounty is the next episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for supporting us on Patreon. I'm glad you're all enjoying it. People seem very positive on the show, on the Discord, and in the comments, so that's good. We'll see if the back half of the season changes anything for me, or at least just makes it. It's really just, you know, it's what we were saying, Clay, just before we go. It's just like a little bit of clarity will go a long way. You know, it'll knock it up a whole letter grade for me, in my opinion, the series, if they just start giving me a couple more answers.
Yeah. Keeping everything close to the vest doesn't do you any good. You know, you have to give pieces that matter. It can't just all be fringe shit.
Yep. Do you have anything you want to say, or are we done?
I think we're done. Check out Rotten Heart Picture Show Patreon. We're doing video nasties. March is Flesh for Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
That should be fun.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time with The Bounty.